Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th Canto, Chapter 6, Text Number 2. Satyam uktam kint vihava. Will it work? No. I'll just chant it once through and others can try to chant it. Satyam uktam kint vihava eka na manaso da vishrambam anavashtanasya satya kirata iva sangachante. Anybody else want to chant? We should. Rishir Uvacha. Satyam uktam kint u iha va eke na manaso dira vishrambam anavashtanasya satya kirata iva sangachante. Should we? I don't know. It's just prose. It's prose. So we're just, okay. All right. So, word for word, Rishi Uvacha. Sukadev Goswami said, Satyam, the correct thing, Uktam, have said, Kintu, but, Iha, in this material world, Va, either, Ak, some, S-O-M-E, some. Not. Manasa, of the mind. Adha, directly. Vishrambam, faithful. Anavashtanasya, being unsteady. Satya, very cunning. Kirata, a hunter. Eva, like. Sangachante, become. Translation. Srila Sukadeva Goswami replied, my dear king, you have spoken correctly. However, if the capturing animals, a cunning hunter, does not put his faith in them, for they might run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's actions. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 5, Lord Krishna says, Yagna, dana, tapa, karma, na tyagam, karyam, eva tat, yajno, danam, tapas, chaiva, pavanani, manisinam. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up, but should be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. Even one who has renounced the world and has taken sannyas should not renounce chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Renunciation does not mean that one has to renounce Sankirtan Yajna. Similarly, one should not renounce charity or tapasya. The yoga system for control of the mind and senses must be strictly followed. Lord Rishabhdev showed how severe types of tapasya could be performed, and he set an example for all others. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Buddha Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitya Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gaudavani Pacharine Navashesha Sunyavadi Paskajada Shatarne. So the translation here, Prabhupada's talking about how, Sukadeva Goswami's talking about how even after, being able to control the mind, he uses this analogy, even after capturing an animal, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them. So it's an obvious analogy that even after, one learns how to control the mind or becomes advanced in spiritual life, one should not take it for granted that the mind is automatically going to be under control. But then in the purport here, Prabhupada seems to be talking about something different, seemingly unrelated, or at least superficially. He's talking about how acts of charity, penance, and sacrifice shouldn't be given up, and he makes the point that even one in the renounced sort of life should not give up the Sankirtan movement. So the obvious thing is, what's the question? The obvious question is, where's the connection? Well, the connection is this, that we know from this philosophy that the mind can only be controlled when it's engaged in devotional service. It has to be engaged. The mind needs engagement. You know, right in the beginning of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nahi kaschit shanam api jatu tishtatiya karmakrit karyate hi avasha kama karyam karma karoti cha. I can't remember the last line. But it goes, all men are forced to act helplessly according to the impulses of the three modes of material nature. No one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. See, so that, and Prabhupada explains in the purport, that's the nature of the soul to be active. See, so we're always going to be engaged, and if we're not, and Prabhupada says, if the living entity, if the conditioned soul is not engaged in the good works of Krishna consciousness, he will be engaged in occupations dictated by the illusory energy. So that's it. See, so that's the connection. That if we're not engaged in activities of Krishna, the good activities of Krishna consciousness, devotional service, then there's no middle ground. It's either that, or you're going to be engaged in occupations dictated by the illusory energy. So that's why Prabhupada is here in his purport. You know, he's not spelling it out, but he's expecting that we're going to make that connection. And he's quoting that verse in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. And then after he quotes that verse in his one paragraph where he's saying something himself, he particularly mentions the Sankirtan Yajna. He says, renunciation does not mean that one has to renounce the Sankirtan Yajna, just the opposite. Renunciation means that one should engage in the Sankirtan Yajna. Matter of fact, that's what it means to be renounced in this age of Kali. Krishna Varnam Tusa Krishnam Sangopangascha Parshanam Yajnai Sankirtana Prayaya Yajantihi Sumedasaha. Mr. Fast Talk himself has told me to slow down, so I better. That is definitely a good. So, we have to engage in the Sankirtan Yajna. That's the process for worshiping the Lord in this age, engaging in Sankirtan. So that's what it means to, engaging in Sankirtan is what it means to control the mind and senses, engaging in Sankirtan. So, of course, Sankirtan takes different forms. You know, we know that there's Harinam Sankirtan, and the form of Sankirtan is Prasadam distribution, and the form of Sankirtan is book distribution. And they're all glorious, and on different occasions Prabhupada, you know, said they're all equally important, and on other occasions he maybe emphasized one as opposed to the other, but you know, of course they're all desirable engagements for the devotee. And one thing that I wanted to mention that is that this is an example of how we have to really try to become fully absorbed in the Sankirtan Yajna. And if we're not, to the degree we're not, then Maya, well, she's looking for an opportunity to sort of like snatch our consciousness. Like in one purport, I think it's in the sixth chapter here. I think it's text number 35 or 6. I can't remember. Papa says, engaging in devotional service is like declaring war against the illusory energy. It says the living entity, the conditioned soul, is already ensnared. He's already entangled in material energy. And when he tries to escape, Maya will present various allurements to try to, you know, get him back in again. You see, so that's Maya's job, right? She's always, she's looking for just that little bit, what to speak of big, she's looking for any little opportunity to kind of, you know, allure us again back into her clutches, or to prevent us from getting out of her clutches. That's, you know, her job is to make sure that nobody, unless somebody's 100% sincere about engaging in pure devotional service to Krishna, they do not escape her clutches. Right? That's her job. That's her service. And she is a pure devotee of Krishna, so she's empowered to do that service. So therefore, nobody's going to, you know, slip through there. Unless we're 100% sincere about engaging in devotional service, Maya will find some way to keep us in her clutches. You know, she's very tricky. I'll give you an example of just something that happened to me over the last few days. Just recently, this new act came in, was presented. The president came up with this idea that he wanted to get cars that were inefficient off the road. You know, so they came up with this legislation where if you have a car that's less than 25 years old and gets less than 18 miles per gallon, you can trade it in on a new car, you know, brand new car, and if your the new car you buy gets more than two miles per gallon more than the one you were driving, you get a $3,500 subsidy, right? And if you buy one that gets 10 miles per gallon more than the one you were driving, you get a $4,500 subsidy. So I thought, that sounds good. That sounds like something maybe we can make use of. So I talked to Savas and I told him, hey, this is happening. And actually, they just signed it. The president just signed it 2 days ago. Goes into effect July 1st. So, you know, we thought, well, okay, yeah, we can maybe make use of that. And we were thinking, you know, the temple and, you know, maybe what we have some. It's called, the program is called Cash for Clunkers. So we got a few clunkers around here. We could, you know, make use of this program. So we talked about it and, you know, we're coming up with some ideas. And then I thought, well, you know, I got a couple clunkers too. Maybe I could do something with my clunkers. And I started like thinking, well, considering, well, maybe I could, trade a clunker in on a new Toyota Corolla or a new Toyota Yaris or something like that. I don't need one. The point is, I don't need one. The car I'm driving only has like 70 something thousand miles on it. It's not that fuel efficient, but it's far from at the end of its life. But the reason I'm mentioning this is because, so I was considering that, and I thought, well, anyway, let me just go on the internet and see what one cost. You know, so I went onto the Toyota website, and I kind of, you know, checked out a little bit. And then I saw, oh, yeah, it's Toyota Corolla. So I clicked on that, and, you know, and I saw what it cost, and I figured out, well, with the rebate, I'd have to spend this much. And then I clicked onto this thing that put me in, like, a virtual drive. You know, they have these websites are so sophisticated now that they have programs where, you know, you just click on the thing and all of a sudden you're driving. You're in the car. You're seeing it and then you actually get to, like, experience what it's like driving it around. So it was like a real, like, whoa, this is pretty far out. You know, the thing looks good. They make it look really good on the internet, you know. And you're driving it around. It's like, wow, it's pretty attractive. And I thought, yeah, but then I thought about it more. But I don't need it. I don't need it. It looks like a great car and everything, but I don't need it. So, but then I couldn't get it out of my head. You know, it got in there and it was tough to get out. I was going on my walks, and as I'm walking along, I'm going, here's a Toyota. What kind of Toyota is this? And I'm looking at all the, you know, all of a sudden I'm becoming car conscious. And I said, what is this? You know, get out of here. Get out, you know. But it was very hard to get out. Still, I'm just kicking it out, you know. So, you know, just after like a couple moments of just relaxing, you know, letting down my guard, and all of a sudden, that was enough. You know, okay, here's my opportunity. You know, wham, she just got in there, grabbed my mind, and it's taken me like, you know, 2-3 days to try to flush it out again. You know, just, you know, work it out. So we have to be very careful. We have to... that's why it's said here. You know, that's why it's said in this verse, and rightly so, that, you know, after capturing an animal, a cunning hunter does not put his faith in them, for they might run away. So after you might think you got your mind controlled and that you're okay to just kind of, you know, be a little bit lenient or, and, you know, lackadaisical or loosen up a little bit, but then it doesn't work like that. As soon as you let up, then Maya just said that's like her cue, you know? She just, okay, great, let me take advantage of that. And she just snafus you again. She just, you know, will do something to get you entangled again. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very vigilant, right? That's one point. And another point is that on the positive side, that, you know, the Sankirtan movement, Lord Chaitanya, he's made it, he's really given us a very, like, merciful program. I mean, you know, Prabhupada says, used to quote that, you know, that statement by Lord Chaitanya all the time, yade deke tare kaha Krishna upadesh. Wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. You know, that was, Prabhupada said in his purport to that, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada said, this is the mission of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Very simple. You know, wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. So, and when we do that, we just actually, you know, take it at face value. You know, sometimes we have a tendency to be over-intelligent. You know, Prabhupada would sometimes make, you know, raise that criticism of his disciples, say you're over intelligent. Just keep it simple. You know, just it's exactly that. Just wherever we go, whoever we meet, tell them about Krishna. That means that we should, wherever we go, we should always have at least mantra card, you know, temple invitation cards with us, you know, and some little books, and take every chance, take every opportunity to, you know, just tell somebody about Krishna. Invite him to the temple. Minimal. Invite him to the temple. And show them on the card about, tell them about the Sunday feast, and show them the website, you know. Minimal, you know. How difficult is it to take a pack of cards in your pocket? You know, you can have like 200, or it's only about that much. That's how thick they are. And most likely you could just take at least a dozen or so small books with you. And people become devotees just by getting small books. I mean, those are the first books I got. First books I got were On the Way to Krishna, which to this day I love. You know, every year I just kind of, not plan, but I just read that again. I said, wow, now I can see why I wanted to become a devotee. This book is far out. It makes so much sense. It's just so, like, powerful. The philosophy is just so right to the most important, addresses the most important issues of life, and just, you know, very clearly. People can become devotees from just even reading a small book. You know, that was, I mean, reading that On the Way to Krishna, and I think it was Beyond Birth and Death was the other one I got, had a tremendous impact on my consciousness. I mean, like, you know, when I read those. And there are sincere souls out there. That's the other point. There are sincere souls out there. I remember hearing in a class, I think it's from, you know, Prabhupada said it, but I didn't get a chance to trace it back this morning, that in the Satya Yuga, the demons live on different planets. And in the Dwapara Yuga, generally it's Satya, Dwapara, Treta, Kali, except for this, you know. So in the Dwapara Yuga, the demons live on the same planet, but in different countries. And in the Treta Yuga, they live in the same country, but, you know, they're different people. But in the Kali Yuga, the demons and the devotees live in the same body. You know, something to that effect. That, you know, the divine and demoniac natures, everybody's, in Kali Yuga, everybody's kind of got a little bit of a demon in them, and hopefully still some people have a little bit of devotee in them. But the reason I mention it is because you experience that when you go out on Sankirtan. There are some good people out there. There are some people out there still that are what Prabhupada would refer to as innocent. You know, on different occasions, Prabhupada would say most of the people are innocent. And it's just the leaders. You know, the world has bad leaders. And actually, on one lecture he gave in 1966 in New York, Prabhupada said the world is being managed by Rakshasas. That's what he said. It's right in the a book that Rajavija, King of Knowledge, page 51. The world is being managed by Rakshasas, man-eating demons who will crush their own sons for the satisfaction of their senses. So, you know, if you want to take that literally, I mean, there's some evidence for that statement that, you know, we don't have good leaders. But the vast majority of the people are innocent. So that means that if they're given the right association, they can respond. And that's what I experience. That's what I experience on Sankirtan. You know, especially this program we're doing now, we're doing this, you know, Latino Hispanic neighborhoods. And these people have, like, they have, despite all this, you know, sensuality, which they got plenty of, they definitely, there's some sort of a pious streak in some of them at least. And, you know, they're able to respond. And those, I notice a lot of the people, is what I'm getting around to saying, is a lot of the people are taking the book, I could see, because they're just being kind. You know, they're thinking, like, here's somebody, this guy's obviously some sort of a missionary kind of person. He's trying to present this sort of a religious or spiritual book to me. I don't read much, but anyway, I should take it. And they do it on the strength of that sentiment. They take it. You see, and it makes you feel good, because you can understand, like, and I could feel that this person, they're not particularly interested in this, you know, book or the philosophy or what their impression of it is, but they're just trying to be kind. They're trying to be, you know, a decent person. And there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people in that category. And it makes you feel really good when you meet one. So the point is that there's a lot of good, there's a lot of scope. There's still a lot of scope for preaching, you know, and meeting people who are receptive. Now, you know, it's kind of disappointing when we see that they don't become devotees. Like, I've been doing this program for a year now. And yesterday was Sunday was the first day that I'm aware of anyway, that somebody who I gave a book to came to the temple. Right? Mother Pavlika told me on a couple other occasions somebody else came, but I didn't actually get to meet him. But anyway, this lady, I remember I met her. She was in a flower shop on Washington and Western. And she took the book and she gave a donation. She actually came Sunday. And it was nice to see somebody, you know. But, I mean, it's kind of it's like, you know, Manushanam Sahasresu Kaschit Yadati Siddhaya. Out of many thousands among people who take Bhagavad Gita, one comes to the temple. Not a very high ratio, but still, I'm not disappointed. I have to, you know, I mean, I could be disappointed and thinking, this isn't, look, you know, so many books and so few people even come. But, you know, we have to look at it in another way. I mean, what I'd like to see, ideally, I'd like to see happening now what happened 500 years ago when Lord Chaitanya was on the planet. That's what I'd like to see. You know, that people become overwhelmed by the potency of the Sankirtan movement, as they did in the presence of Lord Chaitanya, and start chanting and dancing in ecstasy and practically become pure devotees on the spot. That would be wonderful. You know, happy days. That would be great. But maybe that's, I mean, hopefully that's going to happen. I hope, still. But even if it doesn't, okay, so what? I'm not disappointed, because you just have to be philosophical in this sense. You have to remember the different things Prabhupada said of the immense benefit people get by coming in contact with the Sankirtan movement. As I mentioned in a class, last class or the class before, this devotee in Denver asked Prabhupada, so many things have been said, but what benefit? Is it true that somebody gets a human body just by taking prasadam once? And Prabhupada said, yes. That was Denver. You know, Prabhupada answered, yes, somebody gets, a human body just by taking prasadam once. So what to speak of, if they hear the holy name, or if they chant the holy name, if they take a book and give a donation just because they're trying to be kind and reciprocate with the devotees. Now, the point I'm making is people are getting immense benefit because of the presence of the Sankirtan movement here on this earth. They're getting benefit. They're being benefited immensely. Unfortunately, maybe not as many people as we'd like to see becoming pure devotees and, you know, fully participating, becoming people who chant 16 rounds and follow the four principles and et cetera. That's ideally what we'd like to see. But the human population is getting immense benefit because of the Sankirtan movement. And like thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people are at least getting the opportunity that they're going to take birth as human beings again in the next lifetime because of their contact with the Sankirtan movement. So that's wonderful. And anyway, Krishna's got his plan. We, you know, ours is not to reason why. Ours is just to do or die. We have our, instruction that we should try to share this as much as possible with other people, and we just have to follow through and do it. And think like that to prevent ourselves from becoming, like, discouraged or disappointed. And so on that point of, how there are so many good souls out there, there is a lot of scope for preaching, and when you meet these people, you feel very good, you feel very encouraged, and you feel very enthused to want to continue preaching when you get some reciprocation like that. So we should make, Prabhupada actually said this, he said, go on making your lifetime plans for the distribution of my books. Right? I think that's the correct quote, And so I've been meditating upon that. We have to, and that's an important instruction that Prabhupada gave us. Go on making your lifetime plans for the distribution of my books. So lifetime hopefully means long time. That's the impression. Lifetime means, 20, not just few years, but 30, 40, 50 years. So, in other words, we have to be, each one of us individually has to be thinking, what's the best way I can contribute to the Sankirtan movement? And what's the way I could do it for a really long time? You got to think about that. You got to meditate upon that. You got to make a plan. How are you going to make your best contribution to the Sankirtan movement for a really long time? See? In other words, we're not interested in kamikaze bhakti. Everybody knows what the kamikazes were? In World War II, at the end of World War II, when the Japanese saw that they were losing the war, right, what they did, they had these guys called the kamikaze pilots. And what they were is they were, they were in these little jet planes, and they had a suicide mission. Basically, they were losing the war, so they just thought this was the last-ditch effort to try to do something to, knock out the Americans. These guys would be in these planes, and they'd be loaded with, bombs or ammunition, explosives, right? And they would just do a dive bomb right onto the deck of one of the big carriers. And they try to, in that way, they try to take out a whole carrier. And very difficult to stop a kamikaze pilot, right? They took their toll. But we're not interested in that. We're not interested. Prabhupada never asked us to become martyrs, or at least not like that. We're interested in long term. What I'm trying to say is we shouldn't engage in devotional service in a way in which we're going to just burn out in a short time. It's not the best way to go about it. And we don't see that Prabhupada did that. Prabhupada was full on, but he was full on with intelligence. See, actually, I'll tell you something interesting. A lot of devotees aren't aware of this, but Prabhupada, in the middle of everything else he did, tremendous, he did a lot of correspondence and a lot of translating and a lot of managing and a lot of preaching. But he also spent between 2 to 5 hours every day, maintaining his body. And I'll explain that. Well, that might sound weird to you, but no, he did. And this, at least according to what Shruti Kirti and Harisari have said, and they were his, you know, personal service secretaries. They traveled around with him. I just was reading that book that Shruti Kirti wrote back a couple of years ago, What is the Difficulty? And I was reading this one section, you know, it's divided up into little anecdotes. So one was dated, actually, interestingly enough for me, April 15th, 1973. That's the day I came to the temple. That's basically the day I joined. April 15th, 1973, Prabhupada was here in Los Angeles. And Shruti Kirti quotes him as, he says he was giving him his massage. And Prabhupada turned to him and said, actually, three things keep me alive. And Shruti Kirti didn't say anything. And then Prabhupada went on to say, my morning walk, my massage, and Ayurvedic medicine. And Shruti Kirti said the thing, that wasn't the only time he said that. He said that on several occasions. See, so Prabhupada had a program. He didn't preach about it. That wasn't his mission. But he did have a program. And Shruti Kirti went on to describe that Prabhupada, his morning walk, which he did without, practically without fail. He said Prabhupada did that morning walk even after he came off a 12-hour flight. You know, he'd be out there walking the next morning or you know, whenever the first opportunity presented itself. And he said he would walk whether it was cold, hot, or rainy. And he would walk for between 1 and 2 hours. And that was his morning walk. And he said he would walk he'd walk at a brisk pace. Right? And then the massage, he would take the massage before lunch. And that would take generally about 2 hours. It would be like, you know, 1 to 2 hours. Once again, he said 1 to 2 hour massage. And then in the evening, he would take, have another massage, and that was with oil. You know, he'd have sandalwood oil on his head and mustard oil on his body. Sandalwood cools, and the mustard oil warms, like that. And then in the evening, he'd have a dry massage just on his feet and calves, and that could last up to 1 hour. So if you just do the arithmetic, that means minimally, you know, say the morning walk was just 1 hour, because he said it was between 1 and 2, and say the massage lasted, you know, only 1 hour, the minimum of the two, the lower. And the thing at night, you know, the dry massage was, say, only 10, 15 minutes, and then Prabhupada fell asleep. That's 2 hours, 15 minutes, minimally, right? And if you did it maximally, it could be as much as 5 hours, you know, two, and another hour in the evening. So that's a lot. And then he took some Ayurvedic medicine, which I'm not even calculating in there, how long that takes to, you know, make it and take it and so forth and so on. But, of course, Prabhupada, you know, he did it in such a way that he didn't become bodily conscious. Like when he dovetailed these activities. When he took his walk in the morning, he used it as an opportunity to preach to disciples. Some, I wasn't, but probably some of the devotees here were fortunate enough to go on morning walks. You know, we all know the famous morning walk that Srivastava's on, where he got an opportunity to, you know, get Prabhupada's attention and say something that pleased him. And maybe some of the other disciples here were, you know, fortunate enough to go on morning walks. So Prabhupada, you know, got to preach on his morning walks. And then I remember correctly, that when he was getting the massage, he would dictate correspondence. You know, he would dictate replies to correspondence and also sometimes just, you know, talk on the philosophy, whatever he was giving the massage. And at night, he would just use that as an opportunity to hear the Krishna book. Somebody would massage his feet and somebody, you know, like that. So, you know, he did it in such a way that he was able to still be, you know, making good use of that time in Krishna's service. So, so we should have a program like that, something like that. You know, I guess everything's different strokes for different folks. There's that expression. So, you know, but that's what Prabhupada did himself personally. And, you know, we could take note of that with, learn from that, that it's an important thing. But definitely one thing we want to be totally conscious of, that a self-indulgent lifestyle and becoming, what to speak of, becoming Krishna conscious, even becoming material happy, just don't work. You look at the American people, they're just not happy. These are not happy people. You know why? Self-indulgent lifestyle. I mean, just, you know, I mean, I go on this walk every morning and I look at people and I could see, like, wow, there's somebody who, you know, if they would just lose, they just do a bit of exercise, lose 20, 30 pounds, and, you know, they could be, look so much better. I'm sure they'd feel so much better. But here's these people. They're just, what's the word, victims. They're victims. They're victims of, like, a crazy culture. You know, like, it's just, they think that they can lead a self-indulgent lifestyle, walking around with their coffee cups at 6, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. What is this nonsense? I never used to see that 5 years ago. It's just total nonsense, walking and drinking a cup of coffee. It's ridiculous. It's just like, you know, fad. It's just all like, fashion. You know, it's just cutting a profile. And so they, you know, they become the victims. They've been sucked into this thing of like, this is the way to be happy and enjoy life. And they're leading these stupid, self-indulgent lifestyles. They're ruining their health. They're ruining their minds. And they're, and of course, what to speak of their opportunity to become Krishna conscious. You see, so anyway, and they don't become happy, spiritually forget, and they don't even become happy materially. It's a lose-lose proposition. It's like, it's happiness in the mode of ignorance. Happiness in the mode of ignorance described in the Bhagavad Gita. It's you know, it's not even happiness in the beginning. At least happiness in the mode of passion is some, like, you know, thing that you, some illusion of being happy, and then it becomes like poison. But that, it's just illusion all the way through. You know, overeating, taking all sorts of intoxication, you know, just being lethargic. I mean, this morning I was, on this walk, I was with Raja Vidya, and I was just commenting to him. I said, man, I said, you know what, one thing I really feel bad about, this is that more people don't do this. I was, you know, it was just like, it was beautiful. It was, you know, early morning. It was light out. It wasn't hot. It wasn't cold. And there we were walking along and, you know, just appreciating Krishna's energy and, you know, material energy like that. And I didn't feel guilty because Prabhupada did it. And, but I was thinking, poor these people, you know, just poor the people because, you know, they're all just because they stayed up late the night before watching some stupid thing on television. Undoubtedly they were watching some stupid thing. I have a television in my house. I don't even turn it on. I mean, I haven't for years, you know. So that's how they waste their time. You know, they're watching some stupid thing so they can't get up early in the morning and they're missing out on the best part of the day. You know? Anyway, very sad. So we should, yeah, anyway, so we should make our, as I said, Papa said, make our lifetime plans for preaching Krishna consciousness. And, you know, which means like, you know, figuring out how you're going to, you know, organize, manage your life in such a way that you can be, you know, ready and able, you know, ready, willing, and able to be a preacher for a long, long time. And then just plug into some program, book distribution, prasadam distribution, Harinam, you know, they're all important. And, you know, somehow or another, if we just kind of keep trying on all of them, they'll develop. They'll develop. Anyway, I'll stop there. I pretty much said everything I have to say. Archita Prabhu.
Hi, Rupa Prabhu. Thank you for a nice instruction-packed class. It was really, really dense. You were saying about distributing and that there don't seem to be results in terms of devotees come in, but it seems that lately you're having pretty good success at that. There's that Oriental man that you introduced me to a couple of weeks back. And on Sunday, you introduced me to a woman that you distributed a book to who showed up, I think, for the first time. So it seems that there is some payoff happening in terms of visitors, at least.
Yeah, I guess I'm greedy. I want big results. But, you know, a lot of devotees and doing a lot. But anyway, yes, something's there. Mata.
I just wanted to say also people, even persons that come to take prasadam, they've been coming for like 20-something years taking prasadam, and it still takes them some time. But even just that process, their character, you can see how their character is very much, it's positive and it's bright, and simply by coming in contact with that. So even if it takes time, it's still like they make a lot of improvement.
Yeah, we have to have faith in the statements of Srila Prabhupada, and, you know, which all are pointing in the direction of that people are being immensely benefited by their contact with the Sankirtan movement. And we have to just always, you know, be meditating on those different things that Prabhupada said, and that's our inspiration, and that's what, you know, should keep us going, to keep preaching with full enthusiasm that they are. Whether it seems like, you know, whether, as I said, whether what's happening with, now, what happened when Lord Chaitanya was here, it's, one sense, it's immaterial. The benefit is there. Yep.
Yeah, pretty interesting that even in the gift shop, the girls are distributing books up there to the customers. And what's really amazing is that since they've started distributing books up there and getting donations, the books themselves in the shop have increased in sales. And there's, I just can't recall, but there are several stories up there about some people that received some of the books and who actually come back and really, you know, are thankful that they've had an opportunity to get a book. So it's amazing, though, even though the books were there on the shelf, they probably didn't even think about going there to even look at them. But now that they're being approached by a devotee, or at least the interaction is there with a devotee, and it's personal, that they're actually taking the literature and they're actually reading it. And then they're coming back and thanking the devotees for the exchange or the opportunity to have read Prabhupada's book. So it appears that that personal exchange that, as we heard yesterday from Naveen and Nirda, that personal exchange is of the utmost importance to get someone to really think about even reading Prabhupada's books. And it's important for us to think in those terms.
Charlie. Back to David.
I had a question of the verse that we sang during the Bhagavatam class. By regular attendance on classes on the Bhagavatam that renders the service to the pure devotee, all that troublesome into the heart is almost completely destroyed. Now, two questions. Number one is, why did it say almost completely, and how do I completely destroy that in my heart?
Yeah, it does say almost completely. Someone else want to answer that? Not, a good answer is not coming to my shooting into my head here. Why does it say almost completely? Why not completely? Archita?
Well, because completely.
I mean, is it lacking in some way that it doesn't?
In other words, everybody's starting from a different point. And we can't put a timeline or a numerical limiting factor on Krishna consciousness. I've told this story probably a couple of times. There was a gentleman in San Diego who approached me and asked me, how many times do I have to chant the Hare Krishna mantra before I become perfect? And it's not a numerical, you know, it's not a system like that. We're sentient beings, and sometimes we go forward and sometimes we want to go backwards. So the point is, if you stick to the process, this process is so powerful that almost in a very short space of time, you become almost completely pure. But to get rid of that little bit that's left really takes a lot of effort. We all know it from a personal experience. You take to the process, you start chanting, you start following principles, you know, you live with devotees, zoom, it seems that you're almost there. But to get to that topmost pinnacle of Krishna consciousness takes a lot of desire and effort. So that's why nashta prayeshu badreshu, the abhadras fly away when you live with devotees and go to class every day and do some service. You're like a new person. But still, there are those desire seeds still left there that take a long time to get rid of if we're not serious. Mm-hmm. We have to be very, very serious to get rid of that little remaining amount. But it will go away, Prabhupada assures us, if we stick to the process.
I got my phone.
Thank you, Prabhupada. The second part of that verse is that devotional service is irrevocably established within the heart, which means that it's all, once it's there, it's not going to go away. It's firmly fixed. So it's a matter of after you hear, then you chant, as Srila Prabhupada says in the first canto. First comes Shravanam, then Kirtanam. You apply it. And then gradually, you achieve the supreme or the ultimate destination. But the second part of that verse is that it's irrevocably established within the heart. It won't go away if you stick to it.
Jai. Okay, we still have a couple seconds here. Bhakti and Michelle, when it's going.
I just thought it was a nice quote that Prabhupada gave. He said that coming to Krishna consciousness, the moment that it enters your life is perfected. But Krishna consciousness is an ocean of perfection. Therefore, as perfect as you get, it never stops because it's just an unlimited ocean of perfection.
Yeah, anandam buddhibardhanam. Okay. Okay, well, it looks like everybody's getting a little restless, so maybe we'll stop here and we'll take questions. Grantyo Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Question.